Without further ado, it's my great pleasure to introduce my husband, the Prime Minister who will make Canada strong, and Canada poor.
Sounds like Canada poor to me. Now you can ask AI, and AI will tell you that there's no evidence that she said the word poor. Well, believe the evidence of your ears, and remember, yet again, AI is a tool to enhance your understanding of the world, much like a search engine. It is not a replacement for objective truth and your own reason. I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 30th, 2025. We're going to talk about a couple things that aren't related to the Canadian election today, but I must bow my head to the fact that everybody is still parsing it today, and so I shall join that conversation once again. First of all, the provinces, particularly the western provinces, are going to have to get very active and very involved, and Daniel Smith seems to understand this. They have introduced the Election Statutes Amendment Act, which is going to pave the way for a much easier initiation of a referendum process to see if Alberta actually wants to leave this federation. One of the problems I have with Smith and Moe is nothing personal, because who has time for these things? But I don't think a single premier in this country, nor perhaps a single Liberal MP, has ever read Mark Carney's book, Values. Now, I encourage you, I've made a playlist, and I'm probably going to continue and finish that book review because there's so much material there. If they actually understood what it is this man represents, there would be no delay. Scott Moe put out a message yesterday inviting Mark Carney to sit down at the table. A table sit-down is not going to do anything, Scott. It's time to make bolder decisions. Following the example of Smith, Saskatchewan cannot stay loyal to a Canada that opposes its prosperity and opposes its resource development. To that end, I'm not one for unofficial petitions generally, but I think this one is a good idea. It wasn't started by me. It was started by somebody else. At the moment, it only has 7 signatures. End federal injustice, Saskatchewan's path to sovereignty. The issue, who is impacted? The people of Saskatchewan, workers, business owners, and families are disproportionately affected by federal policies that favor eastern provinces at our expense. Despite being a major contributor to Canada's economy, our region receives an unfair share of federal equalization payments. None. We pay, we don't receive. Excessive taxation, restrictive regulations on our energy sector, and decisions made far from our province continue to harm local industries, limit job growth, and suppress Saskatchewan's economic potential. This has left our communities struggling, while eastern provinces benefit from our contributions without reciprocating fairness. Furthermore, this issue extends beyond Saskatchewan. The broader western region, including Alberta, faces similar mistreatment. The voices of western Canadians are consistently ignored in federal decision-making, leaving us feeling underrepresented and undervalued within the national framework. Very diplomatic way of saying what is actually happening. What is at stake? If these inequities continue unchecked, Saskatchewan will remain at an economic disadvantage, unable to direct our own resources and political future. The federal transfer payment system disproportionately favors eastern provinces, restricting Saskatchewan's ability to invest in infrastructure, schools, healthcare, and industries that drive our success. Without meaningful change, our region will continue to struggle under a system that suppresses growth and autonomy. However, if action is taken, we have an opportunity to reclaim control over our economy and governance, ensuring that decisions affecting Saskatchewan are made by Saskatchewan, not distant federal leaders who do not prioritize the interests of our people. Scott Moe and the Saskatchewan government have shown in the past that they listen and are responsive to the needs of Saskabushers everywhere. They need to be very responsive now. This is not the time for dilly-dallying. Mark Carney wrote a book talking about how he would destroy Western Canada. It's very simple. You don't need to read the book. You don't need to watch my reviews. The answers have already been provided. We know what to expect now. Why is now the time to act? Western Canadians have long sought fair treatment and autonomy within the Canadian Federation. Past movements calling for Western independence, including the rise of the Western Canada concept and discussions of separation, prove that this is not a new issue. Saskatchewan's fight for fairness has been ongoing, and despite repeated efforts, we continue to face economic suppression and political marginalization. The problem with the Western provinces is that all premiers up to this point have been committed federalists. I have no idea why. The more I study the history of Western Canada, the more I see that that is a glaring flaw. From Romanow to Bradwell and everybody in between, there was one premier of Alberta who was actually anti-federalist. His career was destroyed. I don't know what it is. I don't know why we're loyal. Stockholm syndrome, I have no idea. But the end is coming for us. It's spelled out in Carney's book. The resources will be stranded and left in the ground. And they'll print money out of thin air, and they'll compensate you, but you'll get poorer, you'll get broker, and the underpins of our economy will be pulled out, and we'll be the first ones to suffer in the trade war that he intends to start with the United States. Mark Carney made it clear when he gave his victory speech that our relationship with our best and most loyal ally, our best geopolitical partner in the United States, is over, and we have to seek answers in Europe and China. Even though he identified China as our chief geopolitical adversary, and you have a captured media in this country that is not curious about the contradiction at all. So that leaves us with very limited options, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Let's finish up with this. However, momentum is building now like never before, with Alberta exploring its own referendum. Saskatchewan has an unprecedented opportunity to align with Alberta and push forward a joint movement for autonomy and sovereignty. It is foolish for Saskatchewan to do anything else except align with Alberta. We are brothers and sisters. There's no way to divide us against ourselves. Where they go, we need to go. And the politicians here in Saskatchewan need to be told. By acting now, we can bring the issue to the forefront, demand a legitimate public conversation about Saskatchewan's future, and lay the groundwork for a Republic of Western Canada where we can control our own destiny. We, the undersigned, call on the government of Saskatchewan to take immediate steps toward a referendum to allow the people of Saskatchewan to decide whether we should continue under the current system or pursue independence. It's time we had a choice. Now, we could sit here and we could debate the wording. We could debate the timeline. But the fact is, I think now is the time to actually start sending these signals. So I'm going to provide a link to this petition in the description of this video, and I hope you consider signing it. Even if you disagree with certain words in it, it's time to send a signal to the government. It's time to write your MLAs. It's time to write Scott Moe. Look, we don't have time to waste here. Carney's in. More pain may wake up Eastern Canada. But we'll get into that aspect of things next. First, I'm going to sign this, and then we'll move on. I'm Frank Vaughn, and Mark Carney has won the election, and he wrote a book committing this government to ending prosperity in Alberta and Saskatchewan and dictating everything that we do. The resources under the ground are not national property. They are provincial property, and the provinces are autonomous. It is time for us to reclaim that autonomy and tell Ottawa to get stuffed. I encourage you to sign this petition. Sorry if that previous clip was a bit disjointed, but they allowed me to record a 30-second clip to go along with the petition, so I thought I'd take advantage of that and have you guys see it. Now, before we move back to the election, I just want to remind you of something I covered 2 days ago about India and Pakistan. The Indian Prime Minister Modi gives full operational freedom to forces for Pahalgam attack response. So the military has been given free rein to decide how they're going to attack Pakistan over the terrorism, which the media seems to lack curiosity. But that's one of the themes that keeps coming up in these videos, is how the media seems to lack curiosity about issues that affect all of us. Meanwhile, in Pakistan, first brick of Babri Mosque in Ayodhya will be laid by Pakistani soldiers, Senator. So the war rhetoric isn't ramping down. It's only ramping up. And this affects Canadians because so many of these people are finding their way into this country and they're bringing their ethnic conflicts with them. So if they get to shooting each other over there, they might get to shooting each other on our streets. And the fact of the matter is, those street battles have already been happening here in Canada. But once again, the media has a decided lack of curiosity and they don't tell you the story. When there's riots in the streets of Brampton, or there's conflict in the streets of Greater Vancouver between these different ethnic groups who brought their ethnic conflict with them when they came here, nobody's telling you the story. They don't want you to know. And that's how the big red machine maintains its power. Because media capture means mental capture. And you can bet the liberals know this. There's a whole lot of people in this country, mostly over the age of 65, that get all of their media from the television. They're not watching us. And it's our job to bring new information to them, because it's not all of them, but millions of them helped keep the Liberals in office. Now, before I get into the actual another analysis of the numbers, I just want to talk about the New Democrats' collapse and their path forward. There's a redemption arc, and then there is a self-destructive arc. And the self-destructive arc is the one that everybody's talking about, but I want to talk about the redemption arc. That is where new leadership comes into the NDP. And they rediscover what made them strong in the first place, opposing liberals, providing an alternative on the left, and not just rubber stamping everything that they do. What they need is a charismatic leader who can present a more centered, more reasonable message, still consistent with the NDP's principles and their constitution, and we can debate whether or not that's a good thing or not later. That's not my point here. I'm speaking from their perspective. A charismatic leader that can provide a counterpoint, a people-centered, a populist left-wing counterpoint to the oligarchical collectivism that is represented by Mark Carney. Eventually, the public's going to wake up. The thing that makes the public wake up is apparently more pain, and there hasn't been enough pain yet. It's all over the place. It's all over the streets. People are hiding in their homes, afraid to go out at night. But for some reason, they're not holding the liberals accountable to that. I guess they put it squarely on Trudeau, but all the bad actors that were underneath Trudeau have been reelected, thanks to Atlantic Canada, and they're going to be back in government as ministers. Things are going to get worse before they get better. The NDP has an opportunity to regain its strength here, moving forward past Singh. On the flip side, the NDP could decide to just fold up and roll into the Liberal Party. Now, I'm just going to provide an example of where that's been done in the country before and how it worked out. And I'm not ready to provide that, so I got to make a cut here. We have to go back to 1999 when there was a close election right here in my home province of Saskatchewan. Three Liberal MLAs, Jim Malenchik, Ron Osica, and Jack Hilson joined the NDP to form a coalition government under Roy Romano, as the NDP had only won 29 seats and could not rule. They were short of a majority. This move secured the NDP rule, but it ended the Liberal Party here in Saskatchewan. It may surprise people who live outside of Saskatchewan, and I was among you at one point. Not too many people are familiar with the history of this province. It was ruled by Liberals, the NDP, and Social Credit for a very long time. But this move ended that. The SAS party came to power in 2007 and has been ruling Saskatchewan ever since. Now, Saskatchewan socialism, and I don't want to get too distracted here, has always been more conservative. Tommy Douglas combined socialism with God. He was a pastor. He was a believer. He believed in taking care of his fellow human. Socialism in Saskatchewan took on a very fundamentally different character than it took on in the rest of the world. Now, those days are gone. I'm not advocating for their return. The NDP in Saskatchewan today is a far more radical NDP, and it has lost its relationship with God. And many would say that's a good thing, but I don't know about that. Some of the things they support are not just anti-God, they're anti-good. They're anti-health, they're anti-biology. But I do digress. When the NDP and the Liberals merged here, it was the end for both of them for a long time. If the New Democrat Party crosses the floor, if they fold up, or if they just align themselves with the Liberals this time, they will have not learned the lesson of the last 4 years. They're in the tank. It's not just because of the fear of the orange man, even though that is a factor. I would split it down the middle. I think half the base of the NDP support eroded because of the orange man, and the other half eroded because of Jagmeet Singh's treacherous and terrible leadership. And I think there's a huge opportunity for their redemption arc, because deep within the core of the NDP are a lot of people who still despise the Liberal Party because they see the Liberal Party as the big business oligarchical party. And they have every reason to still see it that way because Mark Carney now leads the way. And just to clear up on Mark Carney, a lot of people call him a Marxist. A lot of people call him a socialist. I call him an oligarchical collectivist. Now, where do I get that from? Orwell's 1984, because he is a member of the oligarchy. His whole career has been dedicated to the service of the oligarchy, and the collectivist word is rule by technocracy, by the oligarchs, who in their own minds possess the wisdom to rule over people and make decisions in their lives. That's what the World Economic Forum is. That's what the central bankers are. That's what Davos, that's what all of it represents, technocracy. And if only people read his book, they would know exactly what this man is bringing to the table. Now, back to the election results. I just want to look at this graph right here. Because before we do that, let's read some comments. Void says, we're talking about the conservative loss, specifically Pierre's loss in his riding, but we're also just talking about it more broadly. Absolutely, it's not his fault. His riding was flooded with bogus candidates designed to dilute the vote. Elections Canada needs to be taken to task, pitting this electoral interference. If Poilievre made a mistake, it wasn't campaigning hard enough in Carleton. Bruce Vanjoy made it clear years ago that he intended to defeat Poilievre there. And they worked very hard. The big red machine deployed a lot of resources behind the scenes before the election was even called. And this fear of the orange man, as I've said before, affects the residents of Ottawa disproportionately to everybody else in the country. It affects the East disproportionately to the West. In fact, I think the entire orange man bad narrative enhances conservative support in the West, but in the East it does not, and specifically in Ottawa. There's a lot of factors that came together to beat Poilievre in Carleton. Ann C. says, I also think that he would need to do a full-out, no-holds-barred interview with CBC or CTV, lay out who he is, stamp out misconceptions and fears older voters may have. He's a very warm and likable family man, but all they see is the attack dog in Parliament. Yes. A big shortcoming of all conservative leaders has been avoiding the media. They should be giving the mainstream media as many interviews as they want to give. And you can be respectful. You can be smiling. You can be calm and combative at the same time. Because Canadians need to see a fighter, but they also don't want... There's this misconception that he had to fight harder, louder, imbibe and imbue his campaign with more of that Trumpian braggadocious rhetoric and strength. It doesn't sell here. Whether I like it or not, it doesn't matter. Talking about the mindset, the political mindset of Canada. If you're playing the game of politics in Canada, the Conservative Party has always had a difficult path to power because this is a very left-wing country. This country's left of center, and it's been drifting left continually. So this percent support, 41.3%, it's the highest the CPC has ever got. Now, we might as well cover this while we're here. Where did they get it from? And people would argue they took it all from the PPC, but the PPC was only running at 5%. The PPC got 0.7. So you're assuming that 4.3% came from the PPC and all those votes went to the Conservative Party, which I think is an interesting argument because of all the arguments that have been made that the PPC vote doesn't belong to the Conservative Party and thus the PPC voter wouldn't vote for the Conservative Party. And now, because the narrative needs adjustment, they're flipping their script. But anyway, that 4%, let's assume, came from the PPC. The other 3% came from somewhere else. Came from the NDP, came from the BQ, came from the Liberals, came from somewhere else, came from the swing voter. The strategy that Poilievre deployed created the best popular vote outcome the CPC has ever had, which is why, going back to this, keep in mind Clyde Do-Something's comment, they should keep Pierre, but they should ditch PR Poilievre. Poilievre is smart enough that he doesn't need minders. He shouldn't. You can see the point in the campaign where the advisors came in. Maybe the makeover was a mistake, or maybe the public needs more time with the makeover to fully accept and adjust to it. But I said the CPC should keep Pierre Poilievre as leader. It's not their typical pattern, but they should. He led them to a 7% surge in support, and the CPC was beat by the NDP's collapse. The Trump boogeyman did its thing too. But time will reveal Carney is the real enemy. So summing up what I mean there is, what Carney is going to implement in this country will lead inevitably to buyer's remorse. Now, he may not be able to implement it in the aggressive way that he would otherwise like because he's in a minority. It all depends on how the negotiations for government flesh out. We could very well be back in an election in 3 or 4 months. The Liberals, this is the peak of their strength, too. This is another thing that's kind of lost in this conversation. The Liberals don't get stronger from here. They only get weaker from here. This unified vote was a product of the NDP collapse and a product of fear of Trump. And that fear of Trump, this is the other thing. It's a complex thing to try and analyze politics. It's not an across-the-board effective campaign. Where the Trump effect comes most into play is in the center of the country. The wings aren't affected as much by it as Ontario and Quebec are. You need only look to the recent Ontario provincial election campaign and Ford's big majority. Now, I know a lot of people stay at home because they feel completely left out of the political process. That's not entirely it. I think the vast majority of people who stay home, they don't care about politics at all. They don't even have the time of day to go and vote. They don't care. I think a lot of them are on the dole. And that's as far and as deep as their life penetrates. But I digress. Of those who voted, they voted overwhelmingly for the Ford government. Yet, the CPC couldn't make inroads in Ontario. That tells you how left-wing Ontario actually is, how left of center. And now they're clamoring for Doug Ford to lead the Federal Conservative Party. My God, save us. We can't have that, which is why I say they need to keep Pierre. Now, how do they do that? Well, we just went through a prime minister who wasn't elected. We just went through a prime minister who had never been elected. He didn't do financial disclosures. He did all these things. Pierre can find a by-election. He can run. If he wants to uproot and move his family west, he can do that. He can get a seat. He can be back in Parliament. And I think, honestly, if I'm just looking at it from the Conservative Party of Canada's perspective, and that's all I'm doing, folks. You see, I like to discuss things. I can talk about things from the NDP's perspective. I can talk about things from the Conservative Party's perspective. And I can also talk about things from my perspective. My perspective is we got to work on provincial autonomy, leading towards sovereignty. That's the move now. We got to fight Ottawa like they're an enemy, a mortal enemy, because they are a mortal enemy. They want to kill our economies. Carney wrote a book. Anybody that denies his plan for the West, I just don't get it. It's 100% confirmed. Net zero kills Alberta, Saskatchewan, period. So they are a mortal threat. And furthermore, they have been opposing our development and our strengthening for 150 years. It is past time. The premier's got to be strong on this. It's just, you don't have time to dilly-dally. The clock is running out for us. But either way, from the CPC's perspective, Pierre's the best that they've got. Who are they going to swap in? I've heard Leslyn Lewis's name bandied around. I've heard Jamil Giovanni, his name bandied around. I've heard Brock's name bandied around. I've heard Cramp. I've heard all. And that's actually a sign of how bad a situation they'll be in if they turf Pierre, is that every name that I've heard or read about is different. That's fractious, right? It signals division. Pierre was a unifier in the CPC, whether you like him or not, or whether you like his campaign or not. He delivered the best outcome. And a lot of the success of the opposition centered around painting him as Trump North, painted him as a changing chameleon and fake because he got in shape and he started wearing contacts. I mean, the man improved himself. He improved himself. And they condemn that. That's Canada. That tells you the mindset. So maybe there needs to be more time federally for Canada to just get used to this guy. But as far as I'm concerned, that's not where I'm going to be working. I'm going to be working on the provinces. That's the future. I think they should keep him. I think they should find a seat. I think they should keep him. And I think they should break with tradition, which is firing every single leader that loses elections. I don't think Pierre did all that bad. And I know that's it's not a popular thought. It seems that the collective of opinion wants to blame, whether it's PPC or mainstream conservative opinion, is that he blew the election. It was his to blow. understanding the political mind in Canada, the swapping out of Trudeau for Carney was all the left needed to coalesce. They knew that Trudeau was toxic waste. It doesn't matter to these people that the government's the same underneath. It doesn't matter where Carney comes from. I don't have to like that. I work every single day trying to wake people up. And in my comments section, I see the fruit of that. People find me every single day and they learn something and they start thinking and they figure it out, whether they're liberals, whether they're on the right, it doesn't matter. This work is having its effect. And that's what I do. But in the meantime, I have to bow my head to the Canadian political mind. And to them, the Carney-Trudeau swap worked. Now, there's people who say that I am not talking about the elephant in the room, which is election fraud. I am sure there was some illegal voting that went on because you don't have to prove citizenship. You just have to have identification. But I think with 28 million voters, 28 million out of the 40 that are here that were on the electors list is probably enough to explain most of what we see. All the factors that I've covered in my videos really do well explain what's happened here. We had election interference, folks. I covered it in my videos. China put their fingers on the scales for Carney. The media is captured. They had 90-odd candidates on Pierre Poilievre's riding. They had a two-year plan to bring in people into his riding and outvote him. Like this, all of these things explain most of what we're seeing. And if there was widespread election fraud, you need to document it, you need to go public, and you need to contact the relevant authorities and make something out of it. It's no good for anonymous accounts on Twitter to just be bantering around. And videos of people taking ballot boxes home, we don't have central storage of ballots. And this is how we do it. You know, I think a much better way to do things was you have regional ballot storage and you have webcams live at all times monitoring that. And you have people monitoring that and in a far more transparent way. I see what Alberta's doing under Daniel Smith when it comes to reforming their elections. Machines will be banned and everything else. That's beautiful. Good progress. I like that. But I digress. I think the number one thing to get out of this is that's the high watermark for the Liberal Party, and that is the current high watermark as of today for the Conservative Party. The Liberals only stand to lose from here, and the Conservatives only stand to gain. All they have to do is allow Mark Carney to do what he says he's going to do. The suffering alone, the economic ruin, will be enough to wake up Canadians. But I feel like we're being corralled. I watched a brief clip today. I think it's David Creighton. And he was live and he was talking about Mark Carney. And he said the words, you know, at first I thought he was a clown, but now I'm starting to see that he's very calculating. And again, I just wish people read his book and studied who he is. This man's not stupid. He's far from stupid. He's here with a purpose. He's been sent by the World Economic Forum to come to Canada to crush us in an effort to undermine Trump. He might, in the end, deliver us up to Trump. He might actually create the very thing that many think they're voting to avoid. Mark Carney, as I've said before, is the Grim Reaper. He's the end of Canada. And the only check on that end is the fact that he didn't gain a full majority. And we'll have to see what kind of power structure shakes out of this country. But in the meantime, the only thing left to do for Western Canada is to lobby your governments, lobby your premiers, and start talking to people about the necessity to get away from this guy. He's going to destroy us. And not just by leaving resources stranded in the ground, but by engaging in a fruitless and futile effort to divorce Canada from the United States. There's no reason to pursue such a policy. We need to make a deal with the Americans and keep the capital flowing. Anything else is national suicide. My dearly departed father once wrote in his journal about me, if I can't teach him, then experience will teach him. And far more often than not, experience did teach me. I got some things right that Dad got wrong. And that's the mix, the generational improvements that move us all along. But that's the same philosophy that I'm trying to communicate now about the country. Experience will teach because knowledge is not teaching. I try to share knowledge about his book. No one cares. I try to share that the media should be asking questions out of his book, and the media doesn't care. There is a unity of purpose to those who are supporting Carney, and it is totalitarian. It's the bureaucracy, it's the unions, it's the media, it's the politicians, it's Jagmeet Singh, what he did to the NDP. It's in many ways the Americans, though I don't think the Americans know. I think Trump knows what he's doing. I don't think the podcasters know what they're doing. I don't think they understand Canada. They wouldn't be parading Bernier around as some kind of expert if they actually knew what they were doing. So the rest of Canada, or the whole of Canada, is just going to need time and experience before they figure it out. Saskatchewan and Alberta, we've had enough experience. Now we need to start creating the path forward towards our autonomy and our independence. And the edicts of Ottawa should increasingly be ignored. As Scott Moe, in spite of what I said earlier about Moe not being as quick on the trigger as Daniel Smith, it's actually Saskatchewan that's passed some of the most autonomy reclaiming legislation in the West, as I've talked about in my other videos. And you should watch those other videos because they're timeless. There's information in those videos, if you have time to listen to them, that is just as valid now as it was when I made them, and that goes back months and months. Even the stuff about the Saskatchewan election, it still would provide a lot of insight into today. It certainly informs my prognostications about the current environment. Either way, that's it for today. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.